This is Inside the Magic Studio with your host, Robert Martin, the interview podcast with the best in Magic the Gathering. I'd like to thank GatheringMagic.com, where you can find this show and some of the best articles in Magic, and Cool Stuff, Inc. My guest this episode is one of the most recognizable players in Magic, Jerry Thompson.
With one weekend, it seems the world of Magic has changed for you. With the elusive Pro Tour Top 8 under your belt, talk a little bit about that weekend for you.
I kind of treat it like any other Pro Tour. You know, like I just went in with no real expectations or anything, despite working with the team for, you know, kind of the first real time. And I don't know, I just kept winning, and that was kind of strange. And then eventually I was put on camera a few times, and then like won my match for top eight. And then after that, there was like kind of a little sweat as to whether or not I would get to draw in based on what happened in some of the other matches. But then I actually did it, and I was pretty excited. You know, this has certainly been something I've been working toward for quite a while, but it still hasn't even really set in. You know, like I don't think of myself as like a Pro Tour top eighter or anything like that. You know, it, like occasionally I'll just go back and look at the cover and be like, oh yeah, I did that. You know, but it doesn't really feel like anything's different.
Is it the fact that maybe because you had always assumed that you were going to be a top eight Pro Tour player, that maybe now it's I made the top eight, the win would have been more?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that certainly would have been like a much better thing and a bigger accomplishment. And it did kind of sting to just like exit out of the top eight very quickly. Maybe that had something to do with it. I'm not sure.
Instead of being the person that had to make the deck for the team, you got to be a part of the team instead of guiding it. Has that altered how you view yourself when it comes to playing on the Pro Tour?
Well, it's definitely a different experience, and I don't know if it changes my mindset much. Like, I can definitely see myself still working in the same types of atmospheres that you're talking about, where, like, I'm trying to keep everyone up to speed and, like, trying to teach them things and everything, whereas with Channel Fireball, I just got to kind of, like, sit back and do my thing, and I wasn't too worried that, like, all these people knew what was going on, because I knew they did, you know, like, they're very smart, very talented people. So, I don't know, like, it might have been easier for me just mentally to not have to stress about other people and worry about whether or not they were going to do okay, because like I have faith in all those guys. So maybe it was just like more relaxing, less mentally taxing.
Who did you enjoy working with the most at the Pro Tour?
Like Luis and I have worked together before, like in 2008, 2009, 2010, somewhere in there. And we just mesh really well. We have a lot of the same ideas as far as, like, you know, decks that we want to play or the types of decks that we think are going to be good in certain metagames and stuff like that. So it's nice to have someone that's, like, close enough to what you're trying to do, but not someone that feels the exact same. You know, like, I still need people that have different opinions than me to tell me things that I don't know. But for the most part, we get along really well, and he was always awesome. And Josh Otterladen is probably the other one who's just like the workhorse of the team, has a lot of the main ideas for Constructed and everything. Like he'll be the one that's like picking the deck or choosing the card that goes into their deck that makes it so good. So working with him is just a pleasure, just because he's very knowledgeable in everything that's happening. He's a workhorse, and he's not colored really by desire of like certain things to play, you know, so his deck selection is completely wide open. Whereas someone like me, like I definitely want to play a blue deck, so that can be hindering at times, you know.
Speaking of Josh, tell a little bit more about how good of a player Josh is.
He's just very methodical, and kind of in the same way that his deck selection is not colored by his own personal bias. Like he doesn't try to get too tricky or anything. Like he just plays Magic and isn't just like, oh, you know, like it would be sweet if someone was watching me play and I did something that was awesome. You know, like he doesn't really care about that. He just wants to win, just wants to make the right play and everything. And as far as like people not knowing him, I think that has a lot to do with just like popularizing himself. There's a word for this.
He's not a person to stand out in front of people and talk about how great he is.
Yeah, he's not promoting himself. That's what I mean. Like, he used to write articles back in the day, and that's kind of taken a backseat. Like, occasionally he'll write something or whatever, but for the most part, he's not out there writing every week saying, like, this is what I did to this deck, you know, and just, like, kind of demanding respect from people. So I think he does fly under the radar a lot, but even me, like, I know all those guys, and I talk to them all the time and stuff, but before I was on the team, or, like, right before, I didn't even know that he was responsible for, like, a lot of the things that went into their winning decks, you know? But now I kind of get it after working with them.
Would you enjoy working with them again?
Yeah, I definitely would, and I'm going to for San Diego. Like, as far as I know, I'm on the team for the foreseeable future. Like, they apparently liked what I did, so that was good. I'm glad. I didn't really think that I did a whole lot, but they said I helped, so.
A lot of times, sometimes a fresh face, even if it's one you're familiar with, as a player, can be helpful because you provide a different angle at viewing decks in comparison to sometimes a lot of the other people do.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And maybe I'm just used to that, you know, like thinking that way, so I don't really see it from their perspective.
When you made the top eight, what were the players saying to you when they knew that you had made the top eight?
I mean, I got a decent amount of congratulations, you know, especially from some people that I didn't expect to congratulate me, and there are some people that, you know, didn't really say anything to me that I thought might congratulate me, so that was kind of interesting, like that whole dynamic, and I never really thought about that in the first place, but I mean, I don't think anyone was like, wow, you made top eight or whatever. Like, it didn't seem like people were all that surprised. They're just like, yeah, about time, you know, and there were certainly a lot of jokes about that and everything, so it was kind of funny.
Well, I have to ask about that, because is the pressure off of you now that you've made the top eight of a pro tour? Because the comments that have been made is that you might have been the greatest Magic player never to make a top eight of a pro tour at the time.
For the most part, I don't think like the pressure is off or anything. If anything, there's more pressure for me to continually do well just because of there were so many of those comments, you know, like just about me taking 33 pro tours to make a top eight or whatever. So I do still want to succeed. It's not like I'm kind of giving up or whatever, like I got what I came here for or anything, you know. I don't want it to take like another 33 attempts for me to top eight again, and I definitely want to win one and stuff like that. So I don't know. I don't think there's ever a whole lot of pressure, you know, I just try and do my thing, but if there was any pressure, it's not gone.
After that top eight, you deviated from your normal view of a Grand Prix schedule, going overseas to chase platinum status. How difficult of a decision is that for you to go chasing after platinum?
It's pretty tough because if I miss, for example, then, you know, like these flights to Europe are not cheap, right? So I'm out all of that money. There's going to be a lot of disappointment and everything. And I haven't really been this close before. Like there have been a few seasons where I thought that I could do something like maybe 2009, I flew to New Zealand to try and hit level 6, which was kind of like in the middle between gold and platinum for how it is now. And that ended up working out, so that was great. But if I don't hit platinum for this, there's no, like, you know, level 6 or level 7 that's in the middle there. So it's either hit or miss. Like, I'm gold or platinum. I either get benefits or I don't. So if I end up spending, like, you know, the $2,000 that I did to go to a Grand Prix Verona or the $1,200 that I'm spending to go to Grand Prix Strasbourg, like, I'm just out that money, and that's going to be terrible. But, like, if I don't chase it, then I'm just going to regret it, you know, because it is a lot of money if you do make platinum, and it would be nice to be able to say that about myself, that I am platinum, and plus there's, like, the World Championship to consider and everything. So I feel like for how things are going now, like, platinum is definitely within my reach, and unless something horrible happens, I will get there, but the World Championship is going to be tough. That one's going to be hard to make.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Obviously, you want to chase possibly making the World Magic Cup or the Players' Championship?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to make the Magic Cup because the people who are on top have, like, you know, middle 50s point-wise, and I only have 38 right now. So that's kind of tough. Like, I'm going to play in one WMCQ that's relatively close to where I live. So, you know, maybe that'll go well. But, like, that's not even a tournament that I really want to play in that much. So I'm not going to be too beat up if I don't make that. But Worlds is definitely something that I would love to play in, even though I think that, you know, I'm not, like, in the 16 best players in the game or whatever. I think that I have been given a reasonable opportunity to try and do that. So I do want to make that happen, and it's tough because when after the Pro Tour, I started looking at the list, and I'm just like, okay, you know, there are people like Ifro and Kibler and Owen that are above me, and I'm just like, yeah, I can pass those guys. And then Ifro's top eight of the last two Grand Prix, Kibler top eight at Grand Prix San Diego, so now they have, like, still a sizable lead on me. So it's a little frustrating, it's a little tough, you know. I'm behind 6 points, I think, on each of them, and I basically have to pass one of them, so... it's going to be tough. It's going to take, like, a good finish at either one of these GPs or the PT and then have them, like, basically bomb out of all of their tournaments. So
let's talk a little bit about Above the Curve.
Sure.
It allows you to showcase yourself and Brad in a format that's well-suited for your skills. What do you think that makes the show work so well?
I'm not convinced that the show does work as well as, you know, you might think it does. Like, there are certainly a lot of things that we could do better, and we're working on that, and it is basically like a brand new product. It's tough to just start something from scratch and get it to flow really smoothly and everything, but I think that our producer, Jonathan Choi, is doing a fantastic job. He's giving us a lot of direction, and he's not like pulling any punches. He's definitely telling us where we messed up or things that we could be doing better and stuff, so I think it's only going to get better from here, but... me and Brad have like a pretty good chemistry, and we like different types of decks, and we build decks in different ways, so that creates an interesting dynamic where we can agree on certain things, like the metagame, for example, but disagree on how we should attack it. So there are some nice like point counterpoints going on, and we both want to talk about different things, and we can both just like talk for days for the most part about Magic. So we have like everything that we need to make the show good. You know, Glenn is pretty good too. He's used to taking like the host role when he does like deck techs and stuff like that for coverage. So he's been pretty good.
The last few times we talked, there was sort of an acceptance on your part that you are where you are in Magic, and that's where you're going to be in the long term. Has what happened recently changed this?
Not really. I guess like I have this love hate relationship with Magic. There are times where I feel like I should quit and move on with my life and, you know, do something like quote unquote real, like get a big boy job or whatever. But I also love the fact that I have a lot of freedom and I get to write basically for a living, and that's something I really enjoy. So I've kind of accepted, like you said a while ago, that I'm in Magic for the long haul and I should just take it for what it is and enjoy it and everything. And I think I've come around to that, you know, like there are times when it can be tough. Like if I miss Platinum, for example, like I might rethink everything again and that'll be its whole, you know, whole ordeal or whatever. But I think going forward, like, I'm here, you know, I'm doing my thing, and I think I'm improving, like, as a player, as a writer, as a deck builder and everything, so I think things are going well, and I'm not, like, you know, too stressed out about Magic right now.
I was looking over your history of top eights and GPs, and six of your eight have been in a combination of draft, sealed, or Rochester environment. Has the Magic community overlooked your limited skills because of your deck building tweaking skills?
Yes, definitely. A lot of people like don't even know that. They just know that I have a lot of Grand Prix top eights, but they just assume that they're all constructed or whatever. But for about 5 years, I was top eighting a limited GP per year. And since then, I haven't been able to really replicate that. But the tournaments have gotten a lot harder, and Magic is a lot different than what it used to be. Say, back in Mirrored and Block, for example, there were, like, a lot of bad cards, and if you didn't know how to draft or build your sealed deck, then you were just, like, automatically going to do poorly. And now all the cards are very, very good, and you can make mistakes in building or drafting and still end up with enough playables, still end up with a relatively powered deck, and, you know, like, the good people are going to lose a decent amount of the time, even though, like, their opponents are making mistakes and things. So I think a lot of things have gotten harder for me, and, you know, last weekend I got ninth at Grand Prix Pittsburgh. So that was good. I haven't really had a good limited finish in a while, but I was gifted with like a very awesome sealed deck and some nice draft decks and stuff. So that went well. But yeah, I don't know. I used to be known as the limited player. You know, like the people that knew me and that were my friends would come to me for decks because they knew. but I think for the most part, people considered me a limited player and like didn't really know that I had any idea what was going on about Constructed. But similarly to Josh R. Layton, like once I started writing and was writing about Constructed and people see that I'm behind like all these different decks and everything, then they start to take up and notice that like, oh, you know, this guy's like a Constructed player or whatever. And then they just label you and there's nothing you can really do about that. But since that string of Grand Prix, I've definitely shifted my focus from limited to Constructed. Like I used to team draft a lot more and I'll draft a lot more on Magic Online and stuff, but now I'm mostly playing Constructed. I'm mostly interested in Constructed. So, I think some of that has to do with like the amount of information that's out there, like the open series and the fact that, the people at Wizards are posting like the Magic Online daily event decks and stuff. Like I have a lot more information to just kind of like gobble up and digest and everything. So that makes Constructed a lot more interesting for me when it's actually moving week to week to week instead of getting stagnant. So I definitely have been slacking on my limited game as of late, but I'm trying to not do that anymore.
I'd like to talk a little bit about that, or when Standard got stagnant. Every week you were changing colors from red to black, and it seemed like you were always one step ahead. Is that something that inspires you to work harder?
Not really. I think like when it gets stagnant, it gets a lot easier and there's less work that I have to do. Like in between all those opens that I was chaining, playing Cobblade and basically top eighting like once every other weekend or whatever, I really didn't play much Magic, you know, like I played for a week and a half, maybe leading up to the first one after Pro Tour Paris, because I hadn't played with the deck at all and I needed to get a feel for it and everything. But once that happened, I was just like in my notebook, changing things, like tweaking and eventually I would play what I came up with, you know, it'd be like, okay, well, there's the Mirror Match and there are these decks with like Fauna Shaman and Vengevine. So like maybe Cunning Spark Mage is really good. Stoneforge Mystic can get Basilisk Caller. And then, the week after that, it's like, well, now there's more Valakut and Rug. Like maybe I need discard and the green decks are kind of like getting pushed out. So I can play discard instead of stuff like Spark Mage and stuff like that. But, it's all intuitive. You know, I don't really have to play games to know if something is correct necessarily, if I've gotten enough reps with the deck already, because I know, you know, how their deck plays out, how my deck plays out. I know all the interactions. I know what I can afford to skimp on and, you know, what I need to add to the deck and stuff like that. So that's kind of good, but it does allow me to get lazy. And I'm like kind of bored in between those weekends, even though like I'm seemingly doing a lot of work. It is just like, oh, you know, I just wish like something different would pop up and shake everything up. And now, ever since Return to Ravnica has come out, the formats have been pretty good about that. You know, like there's usually not a dominant deck, and whatever deck is like the deck to beat shifts week to week. And I think Brad is doing a much better job at attacking the metagame week to week than I am, because, you know, I'm just doing what I did back then with like blue, white, red, because I don't really want to play these green decks. It's kind of funny in that way where, like, even though it's not stagnant, I'm still kind of doing the same thing. But it's getting to the point where I can't play blue, white, red anymore, and I actually have to, like, start branching out and playing different decks. So I've started doing that this week to, you know, mix success.
Why is green such a bad color for you?
It's not even that's bad. Like, I used to play green-black, you know, the raw in extended PTQs, and I qualified with that deck twice and made a handful of other top eights and everything. And I used to like that deck, but now it's like I'm kind of addicted to velocity and just playing cantrips and being able to like make my land drops and go through like a large part of my deck and find like specific answers to specific things that are going on in the game. And there are cards like Sphinx's Revelation, which are very tough for these green decks to beat. So I've tried playing with the green decks, and I usually don't play with like blue, white, red in the playtesting videos that we do or the versus videos. So I do have like a decent amount of practice and experience with like the green decks and the beatdown decks and everything like that. But I don't like, you know, casting a Smiter on turn two, having to get Azorius Charmed for the next two turns, and then them like wrathing me and casting Sphinx's Revelation. It just feels like I'm completely helpless in that game. And if I were playing blue, white, red against, you know, whatever deck I was playing against, I would feel that the game or match was within my control, you know, like I have plenty of options with things that are going on, and if I make a mistake or if I build my deck wrong and I lose because of it, that's my fault. Whereas with the green deck, sometimes like you're just powerless and you can't do anything. I really hate that feeling in Magic.
You say that they don't ever ask you about the Hall of Fame. But with a successful season that you're working on now, if you obtain something like Platinum Status, which is very much in front of you, you combine that with being Platinum and being able to do more Pro Tour events and acquire those Pro Points. Is this something that could possibly happen?
Well, I have a lot of Pro Points, and I might get Platinum, but I don't think that those are necessarily things that people look for when they vote. You know, they want, like, the raw numbers, like, and the biggest one is just Pro Tour top eights, and I don't have that covered. You know, like, the amount of Pro Points I have is basically just because I've been playing for so long, and I've been playing in so many tournaments, you know, like, I'm sure my median Pro Tour finish is, like, 200 or something. It's probably really, really bad, and that's not someone that I think people would think of when they think of Hall of Fame. You know, if within the next few years I go on a sick run and, you know, maybe like you said, maybe the pressure's off now. Maybe I don't have that monkey on my back or whatever. And I just start, you know, topping PTs like they're opens, you know, maybe then I can get into the hall, but I think it's going to take like minimum, 4 Pro Tour top eights for me to be like a lock. But at that point, I think I would be a lock. But say like 2 or 3, I don't think it's going to happen. And I mean, maybe if I get 3 and I get voted in, you know, like I'll be pleasantly surprised or whatever, but I don't know. Like there were some people that voted for me this last year, and I just thought that was comical and very sad and a waste of their vote. And if I only had 3 top eights, I still think it would be kind of a waste, but for whatever reason, 4 is that magic number. That seems to be the threshold.
When you look at the team you worked with, this year Luis should be getting into the Hall of Fame. I don't see any question about that at all. You're joined by Paolo, who another Hall of Famer. And when you go to the Pro Tour events, you know, SCG Black with John and Kai and Zeev and all those guys, with all the Hall of Famers around them, you really got to feel that your skill level has got to be, like, right there with them, correct?
I mean, I don't think I'm bad, but there are certainly aspects of my game that I could do a lot better, and some of them are tangible things that I can fix, and some of them are mental things that I don't think I really can fix without just getting a lot of reps. One of the things that I think I kind of have a problem with is actually playing the games, where I kind of just want the game to be over, and I want it to be over as quickly as possible, so I get like bored with the game actually, and I just start playing on autopilot, and it's something that I can't really stop. And thankfully my autopilot is not that bad, but there are some situations that I need to like stop and think through, and a lot of the time I just can't bring myself to do that for whatever reason. And I think it's mostly because the acts of like building and tuning and everything that goes into before the tournament is way more interesting to me than actually being at the tournament and playing the actual games. So I don't know if there's a way to trick myself into being more interested in what happens. I don't know. It's just like you play a Grand Prix against someone who is not very good, and it's very hard to make me focus on the game.
Your motivation level isn't where it is for that. But the Pro Tour, obviously, being at that event, obviously with everyone there, that has got to help you when you're at an event like that.
Yeah, it certainly makes the games more interesting, and I didn't really notice this during the Pro Tour, but after thinking back on it, like, I was playing a lot slower than I normally did, and a lot of that had to do with because, like, I was actually going through the motions and thinking things through and making sure what I did was correct, whereas, say, Verona, I was just like, okay, this guy is, like, playing bad, he's a good matchup for me, I don't have to think about this. And I don't think I made, like, any huge errors or anything, but I definitely, like, was playing a lot faster and missed a few things. And in Pittsburgh, it was kind of a mix. You know, like, the games were more complicated, and it wasn't like I was playing the same blue-white-red deck. I was playing, like, different Orzhov decks. I had Orzhov decks in, like, both the drafts and the sealed, so that was, you know, it made things a little easier, but the composition of my deck was different. The composition of their decks was different every time. So it made the games a little more engaging, and I had to stop and slow down and focus and everything. So I feel like that's what I just have to do is, you know, try and try and pay attention to what's going on and slow myself down. And I prided myself on not having any unintentional draws for a string of years, like something like 7 to 10 years. But if what I have to do to win more consistently is slow down and, you know, maybe I get a couple extra draws or whatever, or I have to play more Magic than I'm used to, then I think it's still worth it. But it's really tough, like, when you sit down and you're used to playing the game a certain way, you know?
Old habits die hard.
Exactly.
I've got to ask, because your deck at the Pro Tour with multiple Boros Reckoners, what was that like when you opened them and saw not one, but two?
Yeah, it was strange because after pack one, I had six red cards and a white card. And I was pretty sure I was in Boros. Like, I was pretty sure that's what was going to end up being open rather than Grawl. And I passed a decent amount of Grawl things. And then I opened a Reckoner. And I was like, well, I can take this and be Grawl. But if I play, like, 8 or 9 Forests, it's going to be hard to cast. Not that good, you know. But if I take it and I end up in Boros, it's just going to be, like, the dream. So as I'm taking the card, I literally start thinking about how sick it would be to get, like, another Reckoner, you know. And in the next pack, it's like right there, like right on top. And there are things that happen where, you know, you think you're clairvoyant or whatever. And I think that was just one of those things where, like, I think about it and then it happened and you remember that type of thing. Whereas the times that you think about it and it doesn't happen, you know, you're just like, oh, whatever. But it was certainly interesting for me to be like 7-1 doing the best I am at a Pro Tour. And I think I'm going to end up in a certain deck, and I'm trying to, like, think it through and everything. And I just, like, think about how sweet it would be to get past the second Reckoner, even though, you know, there's no reason for me to really think that I should do or I should get past one, you know. So it was strange, and it kind of feels like Destiny or something like that I went on to the top 8 and everything. But I don't know. It was nice, and I cast them a lot, and they're fantastic Magic cards, even in Limited, so...
How hard was it for you not to want to, like, do a fist pump or something when you saw the second one? Just because getting one can make your deck amazing. Having two can really put it over the top.
I think that my poker face is good, but I could very easily be wrong about that, you know? And a lot of the time in these drafts, you have to think about whether or not you want them knowing what colors you're in. I think for the most part, people don't hate draft as much at the Pro Tour as much as they would at a GP. Like, people at Grand Prix don't really realize that you're very unlikely to play against the person that you're passing to or getting passed to. And hating from them isn't really a good idea because it, like, takes a pick away from you, takes a pick away from them. And if you're, like, sending these cards, you get very clear signals and everything. So when he passed me that pack, I very easily could have just, like, slammed down a card. And then he knows what colors I'm in. But for whatever reason, I didn't really want to do that. So I just, like, you know, fanned through the pack like I normally would, took it very slow and, you know, pretended to think or whatever, like moved a couple cards around and then took it. And I don't know if that's right or wrong. It depends on the person. But I think in a GP, like, you have to do that. And in a Pro Tour, I think it's fine if you let them know what colors you're in. Because, like I said, they're probably not going to hate draft from you. But, for example, in Grand Prix Pittsburgh, I got a 6th pick Obsidot in pack 3 because I was only one of two Orzhov drafters. And that was a thing that, you know, like, I definitely don't want people to know that, like, I took it and I'm playing it in my deck. Like, I don't want – if I just, like, slam a card, basically everyone on my right who did not take that card is going to know that I'm an Orzhov, and I don't necessarily want them to know that. You know, because if we're playing, like, a slow mirror, they might draw first, whatever. They don't know if the guy in front of me, like, de-drafted it and they should, like, play around it or whatever. So, I don't know. I think you just kind of try and disguise what's going on.
Well, I couldn't have an interview with you about talking about your better half, and I don't mean the cat.
Yeah.
How excited is she for you with all the good things that have been happening?
She's pretty happy, you know, like... I would like to think that she would be proud of me no matter what I did and everything, but it is pretty cool getting to share a moment like that with her. Like, we've been together for almost 2 years now, And this is something I've been trying to do for like 10 or 11 years, Top 8 the Pro Tour. And it's cool to have someone there that's going to be, you know, as happy for you as you are for you and everything. So that's great. It does kind of suck that when I'm chasing platinum, I'm flying to Europe on the weekends and stuff. So I'm away a lot more, but she understands, I think, you know, so everything's good.
I'd like to thank Jerry for coming on the show. Jerry is someone who understands who he is and what his impact on Magic is. One day with continued success on the Pro Tour, he can be a member of the Hall of Fame. Again, thanks to GatheringMagic.com and Cool Stuff, Inc. for sponsoring the show. You can reach the show at themagicstudio1@gmail.com or on Twitter under The Magic Studio. Thanks for listening.